the Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Dunnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. The NHL Draft is upon us on Friday. First round of the NHL Draft. The Nashville Predators hold 3 first-round draft picks, including number 5 overall. And this morning at ESPN.com, Greg Rusinski, friend of the station, who appears on the Chase and Big Joe show every week, and Kristen Shilton had an NHL Draft Buzz notebook. And all the way at the bottom was this note about the Nashville Predators with the subhead, "Is Nashville really open to anything?" This was written by Shilton. Quote, "Rumblings about the Nashville Predators continue to grow. The Predators are picking at number 5, but they are not in the typical position a team would be in with that selection. Nashville wants to compete now, and it has a piece of draft capital to wield in trying to land an NHL player from a team that might be closer to that retooling stage. If there's a blockbuster happening in the first round, it feels like Nashville will be involved. Specifically, the Preds could use a viable defenseman to shore up the blue line alongside Roman Josi. And we know from recent offseasons that GM Barry Trotz is willing and able to go all in as necessary and get creative. If Trotz believes in Nashville's opportunity to rebound from a rough 2024-2025, he's likely to consider a fair deal for an NHL-level skater." Your reaction to that, Willie?
Similar to we had a discussion last week.
We did.
James Myrtle, I think. I've never heard of this guy. I don't know who this person is.
Kristen Shilton.
Kristen Shilton. Okay, yes. I do know who that is
yes.
now.
Now
that
lives in Toronto, covered the Maple Leafs for TSN.
I saw the piece. Somebody sent me that piece, and I didn't see the author. And Shilton she's good.
Yes.
I still wonder though if that's based on any knowledge or just looking at a situation from afar and saying, let's speculate. She's talking about moving the number 5 pick.
Yes.
The Predators are picking in the top 5 for the what time?
Third time.
Third time in their history.
Yes.
One of them was their very first year.
Hasn't happened in 12 years.
I just don't think they're going to move off of that pick. If anything, they might move down one spot or up one spot, something like that. They're not trading that pick. I think there is less than 1% chance. Honestly, like you never say never. There's no way they are trading that pick. Now, the other two picks, I think absolutely they would like to move one to try to make a move, the type of move that she's looking for, that she's saying, I think Barry Trotz is very interested. And this Trevor Zegras trade gives you kind of the framework of what you might do. Barry Trotz has a lot of picks, first round, second round. They've got a lot of prospects for the right person. I think you could throw a pretty good package at a team for a player. But that 5th pick overall, that's not going anywhere, in my opinion.
I think a lot of Predators fans hear that report from Kristen Shilton and are screaming into their radio dials. We can't hear you, but we'll pretend we can hear you. Pick a lane, Barry, in terms of, are you trying to be competitive or are you trying to take a step back? And actually, Willie, let's start with this. You weren't here at the end of last week. You haven't had a chance to react to the Predators' reacquisition of Eric Halla. Your thoughts on that deal and what it says about the Predators next season?
I've tried to look at it a lot of different ways. I think it is a move that could be a solid move. The more I look at it, this is what I come to the conclusion of. It's a one-year deal. He makes the same amount of money as Tommy Novak. You can argue that if Eric Halla does anything close to what he's done in the last 2, 3, 4 seasons, admittedly, he did not have a good year last year, nor did the Devils, really. A lot of things went wrong. But if Eric Halla has an Eric Halla year, you could argue he'd be more valuable than Tommy Novak, or equally as valuable, in a different way. He's not going to score a lot, but he could give you a little bit of secondary scoring. He's a useful guy on the penalty kill. He wins faceoffs. He's listed as a left wing, But he could be a quasi center alongside of a young center like Fedor Svechkov. It might be a good sidekick to have for him. If in a pinch you needed him to move up and play second line center, if he were hot for a few weeks. This is, and remember, Eric Halla played for the Devils when Andrew Burnett was the guy sort of running the Devils alongside of Lindy Ruff, and they had a big overachieving jump. I think Andrew Burnett probably said, Eric Halla is a guy that fits what we're trying to do. I'd love to take a one-year gamble on Eric Halla. He alone is not going to light it up, but I think he has more usefulness than you might see on the surface for a guy that had, what, 11 goals and 10 assists. He's a good, solid player with a little edge to him, a little nastiness, which I think this team needs. He's a great penalty killer. But here's where I think we're going with the big picture on the Kristen Shilton. They're trying to win now. It's, again, you have two lanes, and you just said, pick a lane, right? Somebody probably did yell that. It's a one-year deal, so you have a number of guys that are coming off the books after this year. Bunting, Halla, I'm trying to think of a couple others.
McCarron,
Sissons, O'Reilly is a year closer, right? You're on the verge of turning over a lot of your lineup.
Smith is an unrestricted free agent after this season.
And Smith is a little younger. I'm looking at the 30-somethings. Because what a lot of people are saying is you've added another 34-year-old to a group of 30-year-olds plus that already you're wondering, right, what can you possibly get out of these guys? And you're saying, well, it's blocking your young players from coming up. I think I take it as a sign that other than Svechkov, LaRue, and Evangelista, when you look at the depth chart, they're not expecting any of the other, not expecting, right? That's different than it could happen. But they're not counting their chickens and saying Joachim Kemmel or Edstrom or some of these other guys who are 20, 21 forwards to jump up and make a big mark this year. They're going to all need another year, is what it tells me, for when they make a move for Halla. This is a critical year for Evangelista, Svechkov, and LaRue. Those three guys are the young players that they really need to make, that they need to make a jump, especially Evangelista.
So I was doing this research over the weekend. I was curious how often number 5 overall picks in the NHL draft make an immediate impact. Since the year 2000, I thought that was a nice round number. Since the year 2000, trivia question, how many number 5 overall picks have appeared in at least 10 games the following season? So, for example, if you're drafted in 2000, you appear in games in the 2000-2001 season. How many 5th overall picks have appeared in at least 10 games for the team that drafted them the following year?
So it's been, what, 15 years?
Well, 20, 25.
So oh, 10, 20. I thought you said.
Since the turn of the millennium.
Okay.
Because 10 means that you are burning the first year, right? You think the person's good enough generally to stick.
Yeah.
Since 2000, I'm going to guess 8.
Derek, venture a guess.
It's probably lower than that. I would say 4.
Derek is absolutely correct. The answer is 4. Mm-hmm. There have been 4 number 5 overall picks who have appeared in at least 10 games for the team that drafted them the following season. Phil Kessel in 2006. Former Predators defenseman Luke Shen in 2008. Elias Lindholm in 2013. And Noah Hanifin in 2015. So 2 forwards, 2 defensemen, only 4 players drafted 5th overall. You could say made an immediate impact for their team the following year. So I don't know who the Predators are planning on drafting at number 5. By the way, Scott Wheeler, the Athletics NHL draft analyst, will join us on Wednesday to break down the NHL draft. So looking forward to talking to Scott Wheeler. But I don't think Predators fans are going to be surprised to hear this. But the player they draft at number 5 on Friday, more than likely, isn't going to see action in Nashville next year.
And realistically, if you think that person is going to really help you in 2 years, that would be unbelievably great news, right? It's really when they're 20, 21, you hope a guy like that is ready to really help you. It takes time. So that's why I would push back a little bit on the Eric Halla, what are you doing crowd, which is out there, right? But remember,
especially after the Stars traded Mason Marchment to the Kraken,
right, and for not a whole lot.
Right.
But remember, Mason Marchment is not the type of player. He's a very different player,
yes,
than Eric Halla. And that's hard for people. People look at goals, assists, and forward, and they think it's the same guy. Very different objective what you're trying to get from Halla. Marchment is a winger. Halla is a quasi, he's a center or a wing. He is really a natural center. But here's the other thing about Halla. It's a one-year commitment. If it doesn't go well, what has Eric Halla been many, many times over the course
traded
of his career?
Traded at the trade deadline.
Yes. You can get that fourth-round pick back, probably. And if he's playing well and the team is out of contention, you might even get more than a third. We saw what the prices were last year.
Gus Nyquist pulled a second rounder, right? We were all shocked by that.
So Barry Trotz could restock in some draft picks, or maybe even a prospect or two at the deadline. If it doesn't go well this year, McCarron, O'Reilly, Halla, players like that that he held back on trading this year could be very dealable this coming year, and you might get something good there.
Do y'all think,
and if it goes right, you have it's going right. You don't have to do that.
Do y'all think, and I asked y'all this over text, do y'all believe that Barry sort of circumvented the process? Because two seasons ago, you had a very young team that second half of the season, they went out and they played their asses off. And coupled with some of the older guys, it just seemed like, okay, we got something here. And then the next, very, very next season, they go out and they add all these other additions to try to circumvent, and it put them further back than what they were the previous season. So my question is, why is it good to circumvent the, if you're screaming the process and you're asking your fan base, listen, this is how long it's going to take us a minute. We got a bunch of young guys here. It's going to take us a minute, and this keeps you on board. So if we do have a bad season, you understand. And Barry's been upfront with that. But if you're telling everyone, trust the process, we got a bunch of young guys, but then you go out and you circumvent the process and you end up a worse team. Why even do that?
I think he was prepared to go down a longer road of rebuild, and I think they did surprisingly well 2 years ago. And that, I think, altered. And he still, to his credit, he still has not mortgaged any of the future. He hasn't traded a single first-round pick, second, but not yet.
But he traded away some of those young guys that, okay, they weren't doing well. I understand the clock was up, but they didn't build on the season they had the previous season. I think, get that.
Right. I think you can second guess. I'm looking at one thing in particular, the right shot defenseman.
Mm-hmm. Waving Dante Fabbro, I think.
Well, if you look at it, there's lefty shots and righty shots. Mm-hmm. It's almost the opposite of baseball pitchers in some ways, where the left-handers are harder to find baseball pitchers. Because most Canadians, they switch, right? If I throw, like for me, when I played floor hockey, I've never played an ice hockey game because I suck.
You had to specify that.
I am awful on the ice. But when I picked up a hockey stick and we're just playing around in the floor hockey, I was pretty good. But I was swinging it like I would swing a baseball bat. I'm left-handed. Bat left-handed, so I shoot left-handed. The Canadians are the opposite. If you're right-handed, your dominant hand is right-handed, you're putting that on the bottom part of your stick. So you're shooting the opposite, is what I'm saying. You put it on the top of your stick. You're going to shoot left-handed. That's part of the reason why there's a lot more left-hand shots than right-hand shots, especially on defense. So I don't think Barry Trotz I think he might have underestimated the value of Dante Fabbro and Alex Carrier and just how hard it is to find those guys. And he didn't get – we'll see if Barron ends up being something significant. This next year is going to be a huge year for him, and I think he'll have a chance to play. But I'm not holding my breath that he's going to be a star, right? He's got some tools. but he could be something significant. And to get nothing for Favreau, a right-hand shot, was probably disappointing in the numbers crunch. But other than that, I don't think he kind of got rid of guys who had sort of hit the end of their rope as young players who you had to make a decision on. Yusuf Parsonen, Tomasino, Favreau.
Cody Glass.
Mm-hmm. Cody Glass. You had to make a move.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't. They're taking up roster space, and you've got these younger guys that you're hoping are better, and you're still trying to win with veterans. It's a tough puzzle, no question.
And I think, by the way, my minor gripe with the Eric Halla trade, which I explained to Derek and Nick Frazier when he sat in on Friday, is I didn't love that Barry Trotz gave up assets for Eric Halla. If anything, I think the Devils, who were trying to get rid of Eric Halla and they cap dump, they should have given the Predators an asset to take on Eric Halla versus the Predators. Look, fourth round pick, minor league defenseman, grand scheme of things, not a huge, you're not burning a huge asset or two. I just didn't like the optics of Barry Trotz giving up assets for a player who, as you said, Willie, had a bad season last season. But again, minor gripe.
I think he looked at the forwards on the free agency market, knows the prices are going to be high. He has limited, and I think if he's going to take a big swing for a big player, it's either going to come through a trade, which you're kind of talking about, right? A Trevor Zegras type of, you throw a package of picks and prospects to go for that 20-something, the mid-20-something or low 20-something. You've got that. And you've got cap space to go for somebody big, but you can't. There's really not a lot of answers at the forward market. So Halla is a budget guy that can fill roles that I think could be useful, especially if you're trying to leave room for LaRue and particularly Svechkov. I think Halla could be really valuable for Svechkov, and who knows? Maybe Halla has better chemistry with a Marchessault or a Stamkos. Remember, Halla shoots the opposite. He shoots the way that you want him to shoot.
And Halla played in Vegas, right?
Halla played with Marchessault in Vegas. Yes. I looked up. They didn't play together that much. I looked up the numbers.
But they've been
teammates. They were on the same team.
Yes, yeah. They've been teammates. I think
maybe he's got chemistry with Stamkos. Who knows?
I think there are Predators fans who are out there, and I completely understand. Barry Trotz has said on numerous occasions during his weekly sit-downs with Jared Stillman and interviews he's done with other outlets that he is not interested in doing the full-blown rebuild.
Right.
He thinks that...
And I think a lot of fans would probably have to think twice about, do you want to be bad for 7 years?
Barry Trotz has talked about how once that losing is ingrained, it's hard to teach a team how to win. So he is not interested in doing the full step back. But I think there are a lot of Predators fans, and I agree with most of them, that see the ceiling for this particular team, the one that is on paper right now, and a lot of moves are going to be made in the next couple of weeks, so it's going to change most likely. But the ceiling for the team that we have in front of us right now looks like the ceiling of the Predators teams in recent years where David Poile was holding on to the team breaking through. Best case scenario, they finish in a wild card spot and they get taken out by a much better team in the first round. And what did that help the Predators do? Not a hell of a whole lot, because you don't get a great draft pick if you make the first round of the playoffs and lose. So I do think there are Predators fans who see what the Predators are doing and see a team with a ceiling of the Predators teams that lost to the Avalanche in the first round of the playoffs, or a team that lost to the Hurricanes in the first round of the playoffs during the COVID shortened season. But there is the Trevor Zegras trade is interesting to me. 615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on the state of the Predators as the NHL draft rolls around, and a report from ESPN saying, could the Predators be open to moving that number 5 overall pick for immediate help? But the Trevor Zegras trade today from Anaheim to Philadelphia is interesting to me because it's along the lines of something that if I were Barry Trotz, I would be doing if I am hellbent on competing sooner rather than later. There is a team out there that successfully did this just 1 year ago, and I want to get Willie and Derek's thoughts on it. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, talking Predators, NHL Draft. Later this week on Friday, and I think we've got some exciting coverage plans for that that we will share with you as the week progresses. By the way, be listening at the end of this segment because I do have a giveaway at 615-737-1025. So earlier in the program, as we were discussing my makeshift dinner that I had on Friday night, there was a report in the NHL that the Anaheim Ducks had traded Trevor Zegras. It's now official. The Anaheim Ducks traded Trevor Zegras to the Philadelphia Flyers for Ryan Poehling, who's a veteran forward, a second-round pick, number 45 overall in the draft this weekend, and a fourth-round pick in the 2026 NHL draft. And on the surface, Willie, I would say it's a pretty underwhelming return for the Anaheim Ducks, considering what Trevor Zegras appeared he was going to be. Zegras.
And that's the key.
Appeared he was going to be?
Yeah, because I think there was an early flash that he might be something really special
right.
at one time. And he has been underwhelming for now 2 full years.
Back-to-back 60-point seasons in 2022 and 2023.
On a really bad team.
Was on the cover of the NHL video game.
Right.
He was the hot shot. He was the new kid.
Right, and had very flashy plays, in particular the famous flip it over, the pass over the top of the net from behind the net.
Yes.
That was batted into the net. That was a viral play that had every little kid, every youngster saying, "Yeah, I want to try that."
And EA Sports programmed that into the game
exactly
when he was on the cover.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that he's a winning player, right? There's a flash, and then there is this guy helping us win?
But at the end of the day, he's been in the league now for parts of five seasons. He just turned 24 years old. He turned 24 years old in March. So the Philadelphia Flyers are taking a gamble. Although I guess you may not even call it a gamble, considering they really didn't give up much of significance, I would say. But they are taking a gamble that they can put Trevor Zegras in a position to succeed and that Zegras can help the Flyers get back to relevance. Because the Flyers, yes. You know, they've struggled these past few years. But a trade like that is along similar lines to something that I think Barry Trotz should be looking to do this offseason. There is a team that I believe the Predators should emulate this offseason, and it's not the Florida Panthers. It's the Washington Capitals. The Capitals, 2 seasons ago, barely made the playoffs. I believe they were a 91-point team. They were swept out of the first round by the Rangers. It was barely a series. The Rangers really had their way with the Capitals. And it appeared that the Capitals were just going to go into this era where the only purpose was to get Alex Ovechkin the goal-scoring record. They weren't going to be competitive. They just needed to be competitive enough that Alex Ovechkin could score goals. And this past season, the Capitals improved by 20 points. They had 111 points in the regular season. And they won the Eastern Conference in the regular season. They made it to the second round of the playoffs. They lost to the Carolina Hurricanes in the second round of the playoffs. But what the Capitals have been doing in recent years is they have been identifying players in their early to mid-20s who, for whatever reason, haven't been working out as anticipated and taking calculated risks on those players. Their GM, Chris Patrick, did an interview with Greg Wyszynski of ESPN during the season, and here was the quote from Patrick. Quote, "If there are opportunities to add players that are in their early 20s outside of the draft, we should be looking at those types of deals. It doesn't feel like teams would ever trade guys like that, but it happens more than maybe you realize. You just have to make sure you're kind of on those opportunities." And a prime example of this, Willie, was last year, around this time, the Capitals swung a one-for-one trade. They traded Darcy Kemper, their goaltender, to the Los Angeles Kings for Pierre-Luc Dubois. And Predators fans are familiar with Dubois. I believe he was the number 3 overall pick about 10 years ago. Started in Columbus. Didn't work out in Columbus. Butted heads with John Tortorella. Where have we heard that before? Ryan Johansson. But Pierre-Luc Dubois doesn't work out in Columbus. They trade him to Winnipeg. Patrick Laine actually came back the other way talking about players who could use a change of scenery. He had some good years in Winnipeg, I think a couple of 60-point seasons in Winnipeg. But he was due a new contract. The Jets weren't sure he was going to re-sign, so they ship him to Los Angeles. And Los Angeles immediately signs him to an 8-year contract. It was basically the Ryan Johansson contract. I think it was 8 years, $8.5 million per season, something like that. After 1 year in Los Angeles, the Kings were like, nah. And they traded him to Washington right after signing him to an 8-year contract. But in this story on ESPN, the Capitals said that they identified Dubois as a player who, I believe at the time, was 25 years old, who had been misused by the Los Angeles Kings. The reason why he had such a bad season was that the Kings did not put him in a position to succeed, and the Capitals thought they could. He goes to Washington. He becomes their second-line center, and he improves his point total by nearly 30 points year over year. They did this a couple of years ago, the Capitals did, with Dylan Strome. Dylan Strome was a restricted free agent with the Chicago Blackhawks. The Blackhawks said, we are not going to give you a qualifying offer. Hit the road.
This might be their best success story, I think.
Dylan Strome, that season, that last season in Chicago, and remember, the Blackhawks were terrible, had 48 points in 69 games. They decided to move on. The Capitals...
A questionable decision by the Blackhawks, by the way.
Yes. The Capitals scoop him up. I believe it was a one-year, $3.5 million contract. Here are Dylan Strome's point totals in his three seasons in Washington. 65, 67, 82. He was 25 years old when the Capitals took a chance on Strome. And they've done it a couple of other times. Rasmus Sandin, a defenseman with the Maple Leafs, he's another example. But here's my point. If Barry Trotz is hell-bent on competing, if he wants the Predators to bounce back and be a threat to make the playoffs, these are the types of trades he should be looking to make this offseason. He has three first-round picks. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't touch the fifth overall pick, but he has two picks later in the first round that I think should be available. And Barry Trotz and his staff should attempt to identify players in their early to mid-20s, 23, 24, 25, who haven't worked out, need a fresh start, take a chance. Now, the follow-up question, Willie, and this is what I'll toss over to you, is who are those players? Who are those players who are available this offseason? There are a few names that have been floating around. They are not household names. They may not pass the Jared Stillman, Mikhail Granlund rule, which is if Jared Stillman's never heard of you, you're not a good hockey player.
So you can be as lazy as you want, and not know people, and then we just don't know them. You say, well, he must stink.
But there are young
great
players.
Logic.
There are young players.
But Jared does work hard. Let me say that.
He does.
He's not lazy.
We're just poking fun at Jared, as always. But there are players who fit that mold. Marco Rossi with the Minnesota Wild. J.J. Paterka, a winger for the Buffalo Sabres. Bowen Byram, a defenseman for the Sabres, who Predators fans may be familiar with because he started his career with the Colorado Avalanche. Keandre Miller, a defenseman with the New York Rangers. There are players like that who are available. I don't know what the price would be, but I think that if the Predators are set on competing next season, they should take a page out of the Capitals' playbook and look for those 23, 24, 25-year-old players who need a fresh start.
I think that that is the key, is what do you have as assets to trade? You have a lot of draft picks. You also have a lot of prospects that other teams might look around and say, you know what, I like that prospect. And they might have a player that is in a situation where he's an NHL player, but they have a surplus of players at that position. And they might be willing to deal him for a really good package. I think the names you mentioned are good names. It doesn't have to be a center, but it would be great if it was a center. That would be the ideal.
Rossi is a center.
And Marco Rossi, see, these are the things. These are all players that are not perfect. Nobody is going to trade you the perfect center.
No.
They don't trade those guys. It's like, hey, maybe let's talk to the Chargers about Justin Herbert. Maybe we can, let's throw in some different things. Let's see. No, they're not trading Justin Herbert, right? That it just doesn't happen. So you have to take a risk of a guy like Strome that we just talked about, who is, or Dubois, two centers that had some ups and downs, right? Talented, but had not blossomed. But they for varying prices, right? They made the move, and so far it looks very good for the Capitals. Rossi is a great example. He can look really, really good. He's still very young. I don't know that John Hines and Bill Guerin really believe he's the real deal. And Minnesota, what do they have? They're about to get a lot of cap space back, and they have some pretty good young players to where maybe they could look around and say, you know what? We could live without Marco Rossi. Okay. Now, that's within the division, so that's tricky. But that's a great example.
Marco Rossi, for those who are unfamiliar, Marco Rossi was the 9th overall pick in the 2020 NHL draft. He had 60 points this past season as a 23-year-old. 24 goals, 36 assists.
And a little bit of a late bloomer, right? Before that, he hadn't...
He also had health concerns. He had a heart condition, myocarditis, I believe, that derailed his
definitely
career.
Definitely should note that. I didn't know that.
If I recall correctly.
He had a couple years where you were kind of saying, where is it? Is this happening? Like he had not really made his mark until last year. Is that fair to say?
Yes. He had 60 points during the regular season, but he was a complete non-factor in the playoffs. The Wild played 6 games against the Golden Knights. His ice time went from more than 18 minutes per game in the regular season to just over 11 minutes per game in the playoffs. And we talked about this, Derek and I, with Elliot the other day. The other thing working against Rossi, he's 5'9" and 182 pounds. And Elliot told us that John Hines thought that Rossi was not a great matchup for the bigger bodies on the Vegas Golden Knights. So that is a risk you're taking, that Rossi is a undersized player.
You're not going to get the perfect player.
No.
But is Rossi, in theory, quite a bit better than what you've got?
Absolutely.
Especially in that age range? Yeah. I'll give you another guy that Elliot brought up in a recent podcast that is intriguing to me, and this is with no knowledge of the Predators, but Noah Dobson is a right shot defenseman who is very talented. He's 25 years old. He is a restricted free agent for the Islanders, who are in a tough spot. You know, they won the lottery, so they have the first pick, but they are really staring right at a retool. They don't have a lot of prospects. So what the Predators have to trade them could be of interest to them. If the Islanders saw Noah Dobson and say, you know what, his next contract is going to be very, very expensive just because of where he is in his career, what he's done, even though he's not the perfect defenseman, but he's a right shot, which is hard to find, his value is going to be very high. Evan Bouchard, if you watch the playoffs for the Oilers, is another guy that's about to get a huge paycheck. And what Bouchard gets, Dobson's going to be sort of right in that ballpark, maybe a little bit under. Barry Trotz, what does he know about Noah Dobson? A lot, because he coached Noah Dobson as a young player when Barry Trotz was with the Islanders. So Barry Trotz could go to the Islanders and saying, if you're not going to pay the big contract to Noah Dobson, we might be interested in doing that. You guys need assets. We could put a package together for that. So I think the target, as you said, Adam, is key. Mid-20s, 23, 24, 25 years old.
Thereabouts, yep.
You're going to have to give up something to get those guys. They're not going to be perfect players. But in the light of the Capitals, you could hit and get a big improvement on what you have and avoid adding 30-somethings, right? And still have enough of the young pool of players and draft picks that you have coming through the ranks that you're not completely gutting your farm system.
The Capitals hit the jackpot on Dubois, on Strom. Rasmus Sandin was a first-round draft pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs on defense. He never really lived up to his potential. The Capitals, when they were selling off a couple of years ago, traded Dmitry Orlov to the Bruins, got a first-round pick back, then sent that first-round pick to Toronto for Sandin. Now Sandin has turned into a top-four defenseman for the Capitals. You could even throw Jacob Chychrun, easy for me to say, into that mix. But we will continue this conversation. We have plenty of reaction on our text line, 615-737-1025. Should the Predators take a Capitals-like approach to this offseason? Target young 20-something players. As Willie said, they're imperfect, but if you hit it big, you could accelerate this team's path back to contention. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. 1025-1063, the game. D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. By the way, I said I would have a giveaway at the last segment, and I forgot to do it. So we're going to do it now. Be caller number two at 615-737-1025. Caller number two. You will win a four-pack of tickets to see the FIFA Club World Cup match at Geodis Park tomorrow, Auckland City FC versus Boca Juniors. So be caller number two at 615-737-1025. You will win a four-pack of tickets to the FIFA Club World Cup match at Geodis Park tomorrow. Talking Predators, a plan I think that Barry Trotz should enact this offseason, replicating what the Capitals did last year and in recent years. One texter says, absolutely no faith in Trotz to facilitate a trade at this point. The guy has been taken by every GM he's done business with. They need 23 to 27-year-olds so badly, but Trotz just keeps adding 31-plus-year-olds and overcooking the youth, or allowing his coach to misuse the young talent we do have. He has to adapt or alter his thinking, or the Preds are going to stay in the bottom or mediocre. Both of those places suck. That was one text.
Okay, the mediocre thing. Let's again compare the Predators to the Islanders. Would you say the Islanders have been in kind of a mediocre, like, to me, making the playoffs mm-hmm. is better than mediocre. It's not a whole lot better than mediocre. If you go into the playoffs and you're a big underdog, mm-hmm. that's okay, but it's not the end game, right? Mm-hmm. You want to go into the playoffs feeling like you got a chance. The Islanders, and to an extent the Predators, the last few times they've been to the playoffs, have been in that case, right?
Yes.
Made the playoffs, but you're like, are they really going to win it? I don't know. It would be a pretty remarkable run. The Islanders had a couple of those, right? But the Islanders today, they have gutted a lot of their resources. They don't have a working farm system. Remember how long it takes to build this farm system? You've seen the Predators in the last three or four seasons. They've been drafting, and you're like, hey, is this guy ready? No, he's not quite ready. What about this guy? No, he's not quite right. You know, it takes a long time. But the Predators have put in the time there. So the mediocrity thing, if these guys hit, and they desperately need somebody to pop, just one guy would make all the difference in the world. And that hasn't happened in a long time for the Predators. Since a Roman Josi, a UC Saros, right? A guy who pops and isn't just a really good player, but he's a star. They need that. It's hard if you're the mediocre, you're staying in the middle means you're trading assets, you're going for older players, and the best case scenario is you sneak into the playoffs again. That's Barry Trotz is clearly trying to avoid that. Is that fair to say? Like he's not trading future assets at all right now.
But is that what you want him to do in order to go out and get these 23, 24, 22 yeah. year old guys right. That may not have worked out with another team. Like, and if so, then why bring them here?
So, you know, Jared texted me near the end of the previous segment talking about taking calculated risks on younger players. And he said, you run the risk of ending up with Cody Glass or Kirby Dach by doing this, though. There is risk involved. Absolutely. Yep. I would argue
he's
that
he's absolutely right.
I would argue that
everything has risk.
I would argue that Marco Rossi has done more in his career already than Cody Glass and Kirby Dach.
Sure. Yeah.
So there is absolutely risk in it.
So what if you do it and it doesn't work? Then what would be your plan?
But doing nothing could also not work. Right?
But you're developing your prospect league, you're developing these players to ultimately come up to the NHL. But now what you're saying is that, well, these players are not good enough. So they're not good enough at 23 now or 22 or 20. So we're going to get somebody else's 23-year-old guys that ain't working out for them.
The good news, I hear what you're saying. It's a valid point. My counter argument would be those players are still young enough that they haven't reached their primes yet. This is different.
Well, work on your players to get them to reach their prime.
There's that too.
You actually need both.
Yes,
because you're not trading all of these assets you have. You're trading some and future picks.
Right. Let's just say for
they have a ton of picks.
Let's just say for the purpose of this conversation. I don't know if this is a realistic trade. I'm just using it as a hypothetical. Let's say the Predators gave up the later of their two, the second and third of their first round picks. So the Tampa Bay pick and the Vegas pick.
Both of them?
Let's just say, for the purpose of this conversation, you gave up both of those picks in the 20s for Marco Rossi, right? The likelihood of, is it 23 and 28? Are those the numbers, the specific numbers?
Okay, yeah.
The likelihood of the 23rd overall pick and the 28th overall pick making an impact for you in the next few years, I would say, is minuscule. Like, I don't think those players are going to be ready for a while. But you're hoping that you traded those lottery tickets, for lack of a better term, for a player who is NHL ready, like Marco Rossi, who has proven he can produce at the NHL level, like Marco Rossi. Again, some of the red, or I guess you could say yellow, flags are that he was a no-show in the playoffs, and John Hines took responsibility off his plate in the postseason because he did not think that Rossi could handle it. Again, that's a red flag, a yellow flag, however you want to describe it. But if you hit, you have a young player with a 60-point season on his resume already who is a better center than anything you have right now on your roster.
Right.
So I
like the philosophy, and let's keep in mind that Marco Rossi is not the only guy.
No, we're just using him.
We're using him
because
as an example.
His name is out there. His name has been out there.
Because you can look
at
specific. There's other guys that you could probably make the argument that might be gettable. I wasn't thinking both of the later first rounders, but your point is valid. And it depends on who we're talking about. Like, Noah Dobson is a guy that's had a 70-point season.
As a defenseman.
Like, he was eighth in the Norris Trophy voting 2 years ago. I mean, he's probably on another level of establishment than Rossi. So, in theory, it would cost you a higher price to make a move for him than it would be for Rossi. And their respective teams could just decide to keep them anyway.
And they're not giving them away.
They're not getting. So, you got to come to the table with something. But the Predators have things that they can come to the table with. Those two first-round picks late, maybe it's a future first-round pick. Remember, they have three second-round picks as well, and one of them is a very high second-round pick. You could package something like that. If you got a Rossi or another center or Dobson, would you be then more willing to give up one of your prospects, maybe that the other team likes, like a Kemmel or somebody like that who still has a chance to have the light go on? But to sweeten the pot, if it were the right guy, right? You might say, I wouldn't do that for Rossi. Maybe I wouldn't either. But for Dobson, maybe you are a little more aggressive. Or somebody even better that's not on the radar publicly right now. These are the things I think have the wheels turning. Because an impact guy in the realm of the Capitals kind of thing would be a way that you could have some of the, you know, one of those 20-something guys you could probably keep around for a while and help bridge that gap with the guys that are younger and the guys that are older.
615-737-1025. Your thoughts on all things Predators. The NHL draft, first round of the NHL draft, is on Friday. We've got some exciting things coming later this week as we preview the NHL draft. Scott Wheeler will join us on Wednesday from The Athletic. And we've got a couple of shows planned as well, and we will provide those details as the week progresses. 615-737-1025. But coming up next, Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will join us to talk Titans as we await the start of training camp. I believe a month from today is the first day of Titans training camp. But we'll talk to Teron as we do every Monday. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.